ain't it just like the night to play tricks when you're trying to be so quiet? We'll sit here stranded, though we're all doing our best to deny it. And Louise holds a handful of rain, tempting you to defy it. Lights flicker from the opposite loft. In this room,
we went out with Rainy Day Woman, and that's Visions of Johanna by Bob Dylan from the great album Blonde on Blonde that was released 50 years ago today, for those of you old enough to remember, or those who even like the album. We're here now in the studio with Eugene Gregg III, who's a grassroots activist, and third vice chair of the Maryland State Republican Party. Dr. Ann McCarthy, dean of the business school at Hamline University in Minneapolis, former Republican candidate for comptroller and activist in the Republican Party. Then, Ann, good to have you back. It's been a long time. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours as well. And Jordan A. Bloom is with us. He's opinion editor at the Daily Caller and editor of the Front Porch Republic. And Jordan, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us. You there, Jordan? I guess his Skype's not working just yet. Okay, we'll get him in there in a minute. Y'all can join us here, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join in, 410-319-8888. We're going to kind of look at what is happening inside the Republican Party, what's happening inside the conservative movement, and what that really even means. I can define that with Donald Trump about to become the nominee of the Republican Party for president, as an article in the Atlantic so thought that the Republican Party was imploding. I personally don't think it's that simple, but we're clearly at a very interesting watershed moment, I think, in American politics, but on both sides of the fence. Yep. And what all this means, and it's been so long since you've been with us. Let me start with you. I'm really happy that you joined us again.
Mm-hmm. I am too. So what? Hardball question you're going to throw my way.
So the question is, I mean, you were, I don't know if you still are, but you were in the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. You ran for public office. You were an activist mm-hmm. in that vein, and are a moderate, conservative, thoughtful human being. And you see this guy, Donald Trump. Well, you are. You see this man, Donald Trump, becoming president of the party that you kind of cared about and even ran for public office for. So what do you think is happening?
So I have to say, I was in the David Brooks camp for most of the beginning of the primaries, thinking that sooner or later he would, you know, somebody else would come up to the forefront and he'd stop winning. And primary after primary, it didn't happen, except I have to say in the great state of Minnesota where I live. And I'm like shocked. For me now, it's the long game. You know, one election is not important in the whole history of the United States. We can look forward to 2020 at this point because there's no explaining. Well, there is explaining how this happened, and I think we need to pay attention to why it happened. But he's, from my point of view, he's a little embarrassing.
A little embarrassing.
A lot. He contradicts himself all the time. He can contradict himself in the same sentence. But people are responding to his message. Or lack thereof.
Eugene?
I would go a step further and say he's not a little embarrassing. He's a lot embarrassing.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has to earn my vote and my support. He hasn't yet. You know, you can't...
And you're going to the convention.
Well,
as a delegate, right?
I lost my delegate, but I'll still be in Cleveland. You can't insult your way to the presidency. You can't take the lowest road to the highest office in the land. You know, and if he wants to represent a Republican Party, and I mean a big tent, diverse Republican Party, there's some things he's going to have to do in order to gain my support and the support of the folk like me. Because I see the long game. I see if the train wreck that we have of a nominee right now continues on the way it's been going on, there won't be a 2020, and it's going to be a bloody fight in every local election between now and 2022. And so I think, if the presumptive nominee, wants to actually unite the party, because it's on him to unite the party, not on Paul Ryan, not on Rince Priebus, not on any of the state chairs or, you know, state party apparatuses. It's on the nominee and his team to unite the party. I think there's some things that Donald Trump needs to do.
So, Jordan, are you with us?
Here now.
Oh, good, good. We got you. Good. So you heard what we were talking about, right?
Yes, the future of the party in light of Trump.
Yes.
Getting a little bit of echo. Is there anybody get that out? Anyway, okay, so I saw his foreign policy speech a few weeks ago.
I saw that,
and,
too.
And it was kind of a speech I'd been wanting to hear for a long time. But to what some, the other two guests were saying, I mean, is he expanding the party? Is he shutting it down? I would say that he is expanding the party in some pretty dramatic ways. Especially with blue-collar, normally people who vote for Dems. I think there's a possibility that Trump could win a state like Michigan, especially if this election is going to be a referendum on trade and foreign policy. Those are people that are not going to vote for Hillary. So I think he has expanded the party. And I think when it gets down to, November, when it comes to reaching out to other groups, I mean, he's better on the working class. I would be willing to bet he would get more of the black vote than George W. Bush.
I would probably disagree with that. I think he may get less of the black vote than John McCain did. And to the point of him expanding the party, there hasn't been any. I will say this: what you're seeing is folk that typically come out and vote in general elections coming out and vote in primary elections. There hasn't been a dramatic shift in voter registration numbers in any state to make a huge difference or dent. Because of Trump being on a ballot. But what you are seeing is folk that typically would just come out and vote in the general election say, okay, you know, I actually might win a vote in this primary.
I think we're seeing something else. I think we're seeing Bush fatigue and Clinton fatigue. The general population is just tired of the Bushes and the Clintons. This is why, I mean, we can go on about Donald Trump, and that's what we're talking about. But the other thing is Bernie Sanders is doing very well because people are tired of what's perceived as the insider group, being, you know, like trading places in the presidency with the exception of President Obama. And I think we're underestimating how the average American feels. You know, the labor participation, although unemployment has come down, labor participation has not rebounded. More and more Americans are going from sort of job, a gig kind of job with no benefits except now for the Affordable Care Act. But there's just the economy is not what it was 20 years ago, and those of us who have had steady jobs, or those of us, I think, in wonky political circles, don't realize what the average American is dealing with, and that's why they're voting for Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump.
I think that there's a lot of truth to that. Let me just play a little piece. These are some Trump clips we've all heard before. But I want to play these and just rest with this. And folks, do join us at 410-319-8888. Be you Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green, whoever you happen to be, with your thoughts about this. Or write to us here at talkatSantaShow.org. But let me play some clips that we pulled out here.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. These are people only believe in jihad. They don't want our system. They don't want our system. And have no sense of reason or respect for human life. They have no respect for human life.
You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. Your Twitter account
only
is
Rosie
several.
O'Donnell.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm sure.
Certainly, I don't have a lot of respect for Megyn Kelly. She's a lightweight. And, you know, she came out there reading her little script and trying to, be tough and be sharp. And when you meet her, you realize she's not very tough and she's not very sharp. She's Zippo.
Well, let's talk about Megyn Kelly because you brought her up. She did push you, pushed a lot of people. But what is it with you and Megyn Kelly?
Well, I just don't respect her as a journalist. I have no respect for her. I don't think she's very good. I think she's highly overrated. You know, she gets out and she starts asking me all sorts of ridiculous questions. And, you know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes. blood coming out of her, wherever. But she was, in my opinion, she was off base.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
Hi, I'm Robert Shahi.
Welcome back. It's, I just want you to hear this. There's those clips. And so when you hear those clips, I mean, I you know, and this is for me not a partisan question.
No.
When I hear utterances like that, it takes me back to the worst demagogues in U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me back to the voices I heard in the South in the 60s. It takes me back to the Father Coughlin in the 30s. It takes us back to places that are really frightening. And given the economic situation, the fear, I think, in many parts of white America about where the country is going, and the xenophobia that it raises.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just a phenomenon of people being angry. Yes, people are angry, and they have a right to be angry in many ways about what's happening in this country. But Trump, Eugene Craig, to me, is a very dangerous, and I'm going to be very pejorative here, I apologize, mm-hmm. but a very dangerous, not so bright human being.
I agree.
Who feigns to having depth when he doesn't. And it's really scary to watch him.
He's talking
about making Kelly, the misogynist, talk about women the way he did.
He's the king of otherism. I mean, the king of your problems are because of this other that you do not know. You know, his entire campaign's been built on it. I mean, literally at his announcement, he launched his campaign with the rhetoric of Mexicans are coming over and raping and killing you. I mean, there isn't any hard factual evidence to support that. I mean, to come in and say you're going to ban, you know, 2-3 billion people from traveling to the United States, you know, so what are we going to do now? Next, after that, we're going to round up all the Muslims living in America? I mean, the guy has, you know, no understanding of American law, no understanding of our Constitution, no understanding of our inalienable rights. And quite frankly, you know, from what I've seen, no real understanding how government works. Because if he understood these things, he would understand that, okay, you know what? I might actually want to tone it down a bit because I know I'm not going to get any of these things through Congress.
So, I mean, Anne McCarthy, I mean, I think it's a danger when people who are on the liberal progressive end of the spectrum take a broad stripe and say everybody, broad brush and say that everyone who is a conservative is, you know, a racist, or everyone who is a libertarian wants to take America back to 1776, any of those things. But there are people who are activists and thoughtful who are conservative and libertarian. I'm not a conservative, but that's not the point. The point is that this has to send shudders through people, as you, Anne, who are thoughtful conservatives.
Well, he's not a conservative.
No. Yeah. I don't know what he is.
Oh, he's
not an opportunist.
Well, he's an authoritarian opportunist.
So, Anne, but how do you see this, Anne?
I agree. It's depressing. The only word. I mean, it is depressing that people are actually voting for him. And I just have sort of in my mind written off. There's nothing I can do as a conservative Republican except to speak out against this kind of stuff. And that's what I do in my, you know, sort of in my circles, in my group, because we need to. I am actually more embarrassed, to tell you the truth. He's bad enough, but we can ignore him, or we can say this is weird. We don't endorse him. But I'm worried about the conservative party and the people in the Republican Party, like the guys are at the top, men and women at the top, who are now falling in line to endorse him. I'm like, really? This would be like, to me, endorsing Joe McCarthy. You know, only President Eisenhower finally stood up and said, stop it. And nobody seems to be standing up except Paul Ryan, who's kind of, I'm on the fence, standing up and saying, stop this. Just acknowledge we will lose this election, and let's stick to our ideals and our message and chalk it up to a bad year. I don't know what else to say.
So, Jordan, you think people are worried about this for no reason at all?
Well, let's see. So I publish a lot of conservative movement types like Anne was talking about. They're probably most of my contributors, most of the people even I socialize with. You guys think you think Trump is crazy. They really do. They really resent him. And it's very difficult to separate the principled from the opportunistic reasons for doing so. They hate him, of course, for some principled reasons, and they also hate him because he's cut them out of this sort of patronage dynamic. But the other thing is, you know, when it comes to excluding Muslims and this stuff, you know, he's able to get away with that stuff because the mainstream of both parties has been so incapable of dealing with the problems with their immigration system. And then when it comes to that stuff, I just don't see how excluding them is any more indicative of a sort of incipient American fascism than invading Muslim countries or droning a wedding in Yemen. You know, would you rather be killed or excluded? And Trump does represent a pullback from the bipartisan interventionist consensus. And to that extent, I think it's probably a good thing, to the extent he'd be listening to military advisors versus civilian ones, like he said. And then also on the economics, he's bringing in these people. One of the big rhetorical shifts with Trump has been, you know, they talk less about entrepreneurship. They talk more about jobs, because the sort of people that are voting for Trump care more about jobs. They're not, you know, a laid off coal miner in West Virginia is not going to go off and start a small business. He just wants a job. And those are the sort of people that are supporting Trump. And I think those two things, there are definitely things that concern me about Trump, but those two things in particular, a more solidaristic economic perspective and a more non-interventionist foreign policy perspective, I think are both good.
Your thoughts, folks, at 410-319-8888. We want to hear from you and hear your ideas about where Donald Trump is taking it, especially those of you in our audience who really do think that you need a conservative movement in this country or a libertarian movement, which are very different animals, I remind mm-hmm. political thoughts and ideas. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkofsteinershow.org by email. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. What were you going to say, Eugene?
I said absolutely agree with you.
Oh, that was all you were going to say?
Yeah. but there is some fusionism that go on there.
So, Anne, what were you about to say?
I was going to say he does know how government works. He uses it to his advantage. And part of what sort of has always astounded me is no one in the press and no one in the Republican Party has gone after him in terms of how he's used eminent domain to take people's houses away from them to create a golf course out in California. Nobody's taken on the fact that the wealthy he inherited is from his father, he's actually destroyed. If he had just put it in the market in index funds, he'd be far more wealthier than he is. So he's a wealth destroyer, and he uses the government in ways in which it's not meant to be used for personal gain. And no one goes after him about this, which is shocking.
So what do people like you and your cohort and people, your friends, do during this election, this general election?
Vote for Hillary.
Oh, I'm never Hillary.
No, but I hear more and more Republicans saying, just like I hear a bunch of Democrats saying they would never vote for Hillary, I'm hearing more and more Republicans say they would vote for Hillary.
I've heard some GOPers say they would vote for Hillary. You know, I just don't see the upside to it, to be honest.
This is what these, you know, the conservative movement people I was talking about. Red state totally lost their head. I mean, if they really believe two things. The Never Trumpers are making a certain calculation. If Trump stands no chance of winning, they're taking very little risk. They're getting out there. They're looking like principled people and so forth. If Trump loses, that's fine. If he wins, they're taking a much bigger risk. Yeah. But they're endorsing Hillary because they believe she's actually less liberal on things like judicial nominations. I don't really get that. I think Hillary could be relied upon to nominate a liberal justice.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's pretty reasonable.
But Trump, I think it
doesn't seem like something he cares greatly about. So I think he'd be more likely to, you know, outsource it to the Federalist Society or something like that. And that's clearly good. But if you believe the opposite, then you have an incentive, like some of these people at Red State have been saying, why not just confirm Merrick Garland now?
Yeah.
And what were you about to say? I heard you try to jump in there, Ann.
I said I think Hillary will nominate President Obama to the Supreme Court.
A lot of people speculate that. I think that's not beyond the pale of possibility.
There's precedent for it, right? Taft was the president, and then he became a Supreme Court justice.
Correct. It's not beyond the pale for that to happen, I think. And I know
no,
that,
I said that, but, you know, truthfully, if I had to vote for a Democrat, I'd want to vote for Bernie. Because at least he has principles.
Amen.
You say amen, Jordan? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I'd vote for Bernie over Hillary. I think he's, dangerous. But I think the most dangerous thing with Hillary is that she would probably get us into another war in the Middle East, especially with all this stuff, the Gulf states donating to her various foundations. She, it's an open question how much she's going to, be a Dubai firster.
Oh, I agree. She wanted to take us into Libya, and people don't talk about that. I think she's far more hawkish than people think.
Well, she's very hawkish. She's very hawkish, but, I do think that her economic policies.
Do I have a bunch of Dove Republicans sitting in my?
Well, I think
I'm just teasing.
I will say this.
I was just teasing.
Oh yeah, no. Well, Mark knows I have libertarian leanings. I'm first and always a Ron Paul, Rand Paul guy. But I do think Hillary is very, very dangerous. I'll play this. She's dangerous with the power of the White House.
She what?
She's dangerous with the power of the White House at her disposal. I can't fathom what our economy will look like 8 years from now. 8 years of continued Obama policies put in hyperdrive with a competent Hillary Clinton. I can't fathom what our military will look like with 8 years of Hillary Clinton at the helm. I can't fathom what our civil liberties will look like with 8 years of Hillary Clinton at the helm. There's some very, very strong reasons to be never Trump. There are some very, very, very strong reasons to be never Hillary.
And some of her just strategically authoritarian things, like holding gun manufacturers liable for shootings, that's really legally dangerous. If going down that road that's not where we want to go as a country, I don't think. Starting to hold car manufacturers liable sorry, I interrupted you.
Go ahead, Jordan. What did you say?
Well, she's strategically authoritarian. She doesn't have any kind of, philosophy. She's just saying that because she thinks gun control is a winner in the polls. And so she's willing to open the door to a sort of liability that we've never really seen in this country just for political reasons. And that's probably how she would govern, too. However, if she's running on gun control, feminism, and I don't know, those two big things don't seem like winners to me. Maybe trade. The American people are recoiling at that sort of kind of liberal do-gooderism. That's what Trump is. And I think if she's running on those two main issues, she's probably going to lose.
Well, I don't know if those will be her main issues, but I think the issue here, though, seems to me that a couple of things. I mean we can argue another day about the economy, because I think when you look at establishment politics, Bush drove the economy into the ground when he was president of the United States of America and let it happen. And Obama has actually, in establishment terms, made the economy better under his tenure, where people are not making as much as they used to, but more employment. You could argue that as well. So I mean, I think the issue here is a couple of things. Let me ask the three of this very direct question here. There's this question of a woman running for president, Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
And this man who will most likely be the Republican nominee, who is a misogynist, who is someone who, yes, he puts women in power in his businesses and all that's true, but the reality was, his behavior, things he says, his attitudes toward women, what he says when he talks to somebody, a professional woman saying, "Oh, I'd like to see what you look probably great when you bend over," things like that. The women in this country most women in this country are not going to vote for Donald Trump.
I agree.
I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat, libertarian or socialist, whoever they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, what I've been telling my folks, especially our activists, is, I think there's going to be – we don't know what's going to happen at the top of the ticket. But what I do know is that, we have grade A women running for office here in Maryland, like Kathy Schlage and Ami Hober. And, if you're like me and, the nominee or presumed nominee hasn't earned your support, go put your efforts into one of those two races that could really, really, really use your help or have at least a shot at being a good upset.
So you think that – do you all think that could be where a number of Republican activists go, that they
– Oh, down ballot? Absolutely.
Go down ballot
absolutely.
And not even vote for president and not vote for president?
It's happening.
And it remains to be seen, though, if the Koch network puts big money into state races or lower than that. But on the war on women stuff specifically, I think – I can tell you how Trump is going to try to neutralize this stuff. He's going to put all of the women Hillary Clinton is retaliated against for accusing her husband of sexual assault, you know, right on the campaign trail, perhaps even following the campaign around. And, you know, whether that's above board, whether it's and whether it works, I guess, are two open questions. But I think that's probably likely to be pretty effective.
But here's Trump's dilemma. He would probably think to himself, I should choose a woman to be my vice presidential running mate. Now, what self-respecting Republican woman is going to want to be his running mate? None. That means that we might see a return of what's-her-name from Alaska, who I have erased from my memory. What is her name?
I will say this. There are a couple congresswomen that are being looked at or looking at the Trump VP slot. But is he going to grab a grade-A person like a Nikki Haley or a Susana Martinez or a Susie Collins or Olympia Snow or a Kelly Ayotte? No. But he could, you know, potentially grab a, you know, congresswoman from the great state of Tennessee who, you know, may or may not be speaking in Maryland next month.
So there's another thorny issue here that's come up on this program a great deal. And you've been part of these discussions, Eugene, when we've had this broad section of left to right on these discussions on the air. And I was thinking about what you said just a moment ago, Jordan, that when certain white people in America rail against liberal policies, there's a racist undertone, sometimes overtone to that, yeah. And into those issues. And can folks on this panel deny that that's not part of what is fueling the Trump phenomenon in this country right now? And that could get even deeper and uglier as this campaign rolls ahead?
It could get deeper and uglier. And it's part of the reason why, you know, part of the requirements that, you know, I put on candidates for my support, especially when they run primary elections the way Donald Trump has, he's going to have to do something to not just walk back his previous statements, the anger that he's riled up. He's going to have to somewhat atone for it. You know, it's not enough to say, oh, everything I said was a suggestion. No, that doesn't do it. You know, this is literally the guy that led the birther movement. I mean, you go from, you know, the birther movement to all Mexicans are rapists and
murderers
to, you know, we're going to have a full-on Muslim ban. And then you have, I mean, where does it stop? And you can't reasonably ask somebody to come in and say, be my friend, although I just slapped you around 20 times in the worst way possible.
So
those weren't political hits. Those were personal
hits.
I don't think
he can pull back from anything because nobody would believe him. He's the kind of guy that, truthfully, in a poker game would double down. And he won't be pulling back. In fact, I think if Hillary is likely to be clearly his opponent, he's just going to go after her. That's what he'll do. And enough people dislike her that's a kind of a smart strategy on his part.
Yeah, and I think it's worth pointing out that the left...
Oh, by the way, their daughters are best friends, though.
Sorry.
What'd you say, Hen?
I was going to say their daughters are best friends. Chelsea and Ivanka.
Chelsea and Ivanka are best friends?
Yeah,
they're really close friends.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I need to follow the gossip columns. I'm just teasing. I didn't know that.
I got that from a Democrat, so maybe I
What were you going to say, Jordan?
Well, they used to make this same argument with respect to the white working class and the left, right? That they would never vote for a socialist because they were too racist. They didn't believe in the sort of broad-based solidarity that, you know, socialist movements are usually characterized by. Now they're voting for Bernie Sanders, and the same liberal press is saying that they're voting for Bernie Sanders because they're racist. You know, the contempt of the liberal press for the white working class is pretty boundless.
Well, let me just challenge you there a little bit, Jordan. I mean, I do not have contempt for the white working class at all, and understand a lot of the anger that people have in the white working class. But for us to sit here in the United States of America and deny the depths of racism in this country, in the marrow of this country, and saying that's not part of what fuels what's happening with Donald Trump, is like putting our heads in the sand.
Sure, but nobody's doing that. And Trump is not talking in the same sort of government cutting way that usually characterize conservative campaigns, right? It's this, he's more overt about not wanting to trim entitlements. He's, you know, talks about taxing the rich more. I don't think it's the same sort of conservative grievance, like it's all going to the takers rather than the makers. That doesn't really seem like it's the sort of sentiment that underlies Trump's campaign, like other conservative campaigns
have had. I have to agree with Jordan there because, you know, basically Trump is not a conservative.
Well, he's not a conservative. He's a big government authoritarian.
As I said earlier, this has nothing to do with being conservative. Yeah. This has to do with what's fueling
his movement.
His movement. And when you see what he says at rallies, especially when black protesters just stand up, about beat him up, you know, and go after them. I mean, like lynch mob kind of talk. Yep. I mean, this is, I mean, and part of what you have always said and other people I know who are young black Republicans, that you've been trying to address the issue of racism to little avail often.
Yeah. I think this cycle is going to be interesting. Interesting watch.
Mark, there's no denying what you're saying. It's true. That's part of the embarrassment.
I will say this. I'm not part of the establishment. You know, I do play within the establishment.
That's why. Until you become the vice chair instead of the third vice chair. I'm just teasing.
But I will say this. The RNC, a lot of outside groups, the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, has taken dramatic steps to address the race issues within the Republican Party, especially from the policy standpoint. Even if you just look, you know, over the last couple years and the shift that Paul Ryan's took on poverty, from talking about it and from the traditional Republican, you know, rhetorical way to how he speaks about it now and the policy perspectives he's put up now. I think a lot of those gains, and I can speak on behalf of hundreds, if not thousands, of young black Latino activists that have been around for the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years, poured a lot into this game, poured a lot into this movement. A Donald Trump nomination, a Donald Trump presidency, wipes out a lot of those gains.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of those gains. And that's our number one concern.
I agree with you, Gene, and that's what makes it depressing.
So, in long term, what does this do? What will this do to the Republican Party, long term? Do you think?
Well, I think it's depend upon if Donald Trump, the effect of Trump, can be contained, which to some degree I actually think it is. It can be. If you look at one thing I've been looking at, are the effect that he's having at the top of the ticket, the effect he's having down ballot. Well, I think one thing that should be noted is this is much different than 2010. You know, where I think there was a similar level of anger with government. You haven't seen a single incumbent congressman or U.S. senator get knocked off yet. You haven't seen a single, you know, super Tea Party. I mean, there have been a couple here and there. And there's going to be one come out of Florida with Rebecca Botlock, who I'm supporting. Succeed over an establishment type, which tells me that a lot of these folk are voting for president and stopping there. So I think that the long game on this is going to be extremely depend upon if the effect of Trump can be contained to just Trump, and then we can pivot into 2018 and highlight folk like Governor Hogan and Governor Baker.
I'm sorry. We only have 90 seconds left. I apologize. So, quick closing thoughts. So, Anne and then Jordan.
All right. So the conservative movement here in D.C. has really delivered very little results to actual conservative voters. And if he wins without them, you have a very good argument that they're totally irrelevant. So the question is, do they split for a third party? That would largely be over foreign policy. It seems like it would have been the main objection. That's probably not going to happen either. But the conservative movement probably stands to lose the most.
And McCarthy.
So if they think they're going to lose the election anyway, there's something to be gained from splitting, even though it guarantees a loss of the election. But I'll say something. When I lived in Indiana, it was a presidential election. I didn't know who to vote for. By these standards, it was mild. And this woman who had lived from the turn of the century, 1900, that is, through all those wars, through the Great Depression, looked at me and said, "Honey, it's a great country. We can survive anybody for 4 years."
Let's hope she's right.
That's my attitude.
So I'm going to thank you, Dr. Anne McCarthy, Dean of the Business School at Hamline University, Eugene Craig, Third Vice Chair of the Maryland State Republican Party, and Jordan Bloom, Opinion Editor of the Daily Caller and Editor of the Front Porch Republic. Front Porch Republic. Thank the three of you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you all so much.
Have a great day.
You too. You too. All of you. Remind you, on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our show interns are Morgan Barber and Calvin Perry. Theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.